Hey folks, welcome back to Cheological. Today is another one of that mini-series on marketing that I promised y'all. If you've listened to some of these mini-series already, you'll know that I've invited people that have nothing to do with acupuncture and everything to do with helping acupuncturists get in touch with what I like to call first principles, right? There are some basics to business that sort of transcend all businesses in a way. And if you know those, well, you know what? It gives you an unfair advantage. So I've got Robin Sales with me today. I got to tell you this story. This is a good story. I met Robin at this podcast conference that I went to last February. And there was this sort of social mixer thing going on at the bar the night before. And because it's podcasters, the place is full of people talking to each other, because guess what podcasters do? They talk to each other. It's crazy. And I noticed that some people had this little button that they were wearing and had a little rocket ship on it. And the 8-year-old boy in me still loves rocket ships. I'd see someone, oh, they got that rocket ship. And then, you know, and someone else, I had that rocket ship. I'm like, what, where they got that rocket ship? And then I meet this woman with flaming orange hair, cat eye glasses from 1954. And she hands me a button with a rocket ship on and says, hi, I'm Robin. So Robin is involved with branding. Okay. All right. Those of you that just rolled your eyes, I want to tell you what Robin is about, is helping people to get in touch with their innate brilliance. And I'm not talking about candles and yoga positions here. I'm talking about taking names and kicking butts in the business world. Over on her website, you'll see her in sporty attire with a crash helmet under her arm. And the quote, people learn best when they belly laugh. What can I say? Y'all better buckle up. Robin, welcome to Cheological.
Woo! Thank you. It's my pleasure to be here. And I'm going to need a copy of that intro to use for like everything I do from this point forward, because that was awesome.
I'm glad you liked it. There's something that happens when you're around creative people. Stuff just kind of rubs off and you find yourself doing things that you didn't even know you had in you.
Oh, absolutely. And I love that you still tell the story of that button, because I see that as sort of like an old school marketing tactic, but it's so old school that like nobody's doing it anymore. I just finished writing something where I talked about one of the most revolutionary things you can do sometimes is just go back to basics.
Ah, great. Well, let's start with some of the basics. Share some of the basics with us. Because, you know, you heard me say this in the introduction, and I'm a firm believer of this. And even in the practice of medicine that I do, first principles will never let you down, it seems.
Mm-hmm.
So share with us some of the old school. I mean, you're wearing the old school glasses, so let's have it.
There is this old adage that people do business with people that they know, like, and trust.
Mm-hmm.
And we think about the know, and we think about the trust, and there's lots of stuff out there that will show you how to get your face out there so that everybody knows you, and here's some techniques and neuro-linguistic programming and all this stuff to get people to trust you. And what I've learned over the years in my experience, and particularly in this last year in doing some research on sales and human behavior, it's the like part that's the most important. I have to like you. And I think as business people, understanding that the like part is so important, especially for long-term relationships and long-term success, you have to stop trying to make everybody like you and make the right people like you.
Oh, man. You probably know Seth Godin, don't you?
Oh, I love Seth.
Yeah. Yeah. He talks a lot about that. People like us do things like this.
Yeah.
Right?
So if you're familiar with Seth Godin and his whole idea of the purple cow and do the never, right? I've mm-hmm. built an entire business on do the never.
Tell us about doing the never.
So I come from a background of 16 plus years in corporate learning and development. So training, both technical and soft skills, then got into sales training, leadership training, sales management. And with that background, there's a lot of leaders do this and salespeople do that. And this is how you do it. And that's the way you do it. And I knew that people don't respond in my classroom because I'm telling them the things that they should do or because I'm doing the things that a facilitator should do. They respond because they're making a human connection. And so if we could just focus on the human connection and quit telling people what they should do. It was a big risk in building my brand because there's tons of stuff out there that'll say, well, if you're trying to tap into the corporate market, if you want to get booked on convention stages and in corporate workshops, then don't do this and don't do that. You can't look too funky and you got to wear your navy blue blazer. And I just threw all that away and said, no,
not me, baby.
That is not me. I have the flaming orange hair and the cat eye glasses and rock and roll buttons. There's a picture of me on my website with my tongue sticking out. And the
But I love the crash helmet.
The whole principle is, if you are looking for someone and you see that picture of me making a silly face and that says, I don't think she's the right person for us, then great, because you're not the right customer for me either.
That is so true. I did a talk on this podcast about websites a while back with a similar sort of thing. Make your website look like you. Make it your voice. Make it you. The people that come to it and go, whoa, I'm interested in this person, great. And the people who don't, everybody just had a better day because you didn't have to have a relationship that didn't work out.
Right. You don't have to waste your time on a phone call where halfway through it, you're like, oh my God. Yeah, how do I get this person off the phone? Because I know they're not my client. You know, what if the words you put out there, the image you put out there is purposefully polarizing so that they can self-select out? They know they're not your client before you have to tell them that.
I think it's really respectful when you come right down to it.
Yeah.
To be able to do that kind of thing.
Yeah, the opposite is true though as well. So I've created a certain look and a certain brand, and that sets an expectation. So if you go to my website and you see the silly pictures and whatever, and I show up for our first meeting with a soccer mom haircut and khaki pants, I've immediately broken my brand because I haven't met the expectation of what I've painted online. That's another facet of being as true to yourself and your personality and what you put out there as well, because you're painting a picture, you're painting an expectation of what the experience of working with you is going to be like. And if you don't match that on my first interaction, that psychological contract is immediately broken.
I hear you use the word brand. There still is to this day something to me that when I hear brand, I always cringe a little bit inside. I'm still working through that piece, but I just heard you say something and it helps. I find it very soothing when you say my brand, you know, when I'm on target, you say it's about me. It's about what I really am. It's what I authentically am, what I authentically have to offer, and who you're actually going to get. It's not an image.
Your brand is what people say about you when you're not in the room.
Ooh.
And I can't take credit for that.
Oh my God. Say that again, folks. You got to say that again.
Your brand is what other people say about you when you're not in the room. That is the wisdom of Jeff Bezos, CEO of Amazon. But it's the best quote I've found to encapsulate my idea of brand.
That makes sense. I get it. But it goes beyond that. I mean, it goes into character. It goes into personality. It goes into authenticity. It goes into what's real and what's true, doesn't it?
It does. So I use the word experience a lot. Michael, you and I have met, but I haven't been to St. Louis. I don't know what your establishment is like, but I can make a pretty good guess based on my personal interactions with you. And so you create an experience in that environment. There is an experience created when you are interacting face to face with another person. And for me, the ultimate goal of branding is to recreate that human to human personal experience as authentically and effectively as possible, so that I know before I even walk in the door of your establishment, I have a really good idea of what to expect. I know that, you know, people are out there looking for that. That's another reason to do the never, right? So if we go back to my earlier example, no, professional corporate workshop facilitators never do these things. Well, what if they did? I guarantee you there's a host of HR and business leaders who are just dying to get somebody in the room with their team. That's not the same old thing, right?
Right, because polo shirt and khaki pants. I mean, there's a million of those.
So if you're the person who's out there like typing into the search thing on Google, looking for the person who doesn't do all that stuff, bingo, hopefully you're going to find me. And my job in building my brand is to put enough out there that you will find me. That's the same regardless of industry. No two acupuncturists are going to create the same experience with their patients. So as a patient, I need to be smart enough to say what it is that I'm looking for and go search for those things. Or sometimes we just sort of stumble upon it. You know, you go to two or three different ones in order to figure out, well, that's what I don't want.
Right. And then the right one shows up and you go, ah, yes, that's right. And I think often people don't even have the vocabulary about why they like it better. They just go, it fits. This is just, you know, it's just a comfortable shoe.
Mm-hmm. So in regards to that, right, you have your clients, you fit, you're the comfortable shoe. If they don't know how to describe that experience, where are your referrals going to come from?
Oh.
Where's your word of mouth going to come from?
Okay. So are you suggesting that we help give them a vocabulary to talk about us and gossip?
Yes.
Ooh, I love it.
So if we go back to that Jeff Bezos quote, your brand is what other people say about you when you're not in the room. Your brand is what your clients say about you when they're not in the room with you. What a lot of us forget or maybe don't realize to begin with is we're in control of that story. You are allowed to be in control of that story. You're allowed to feed the information to the client. You're allowed to help them figure out what to say about you in order to perpetuate that brand story.
Which actually is just perpetuating the authentic person that you happen to be and the kind of work that you authentically happen to do.
Mm-hmm.
You're helping to give them a vocabulary to describe what someone might expect.
Absolutely. And I don't know about you, but I've gotten many restaurant recommendations from friends and family. And I'm like, well, why did you like it so much? I don't know. You just have to go there. They don't know what to say. They don't know how to explain why they enjoyed it so much. Imagine if on the menu of the restaurant, it gave them little snippets that they could, you know, they read it and go, oh, that's it. That's why I like this place so much. And now you've told me what to say when I go recommend the restaurant to my friends and family.
My first thought was, that's kind of sneaky. But then the second thought comes in and goes, it's brilliant and it's helpful.
Mm-hmm.
It's helpful to give people something that they can use to because, you know, people love to share something that's been helpful for them with other people that they care about.
If you look at the statistics, word of mouth marketing is way more effective than any advertising, social media, you name it. The companies that pay the millions of dollars to get their commercial on the Super Bowl aren't doing it because it's the Super Bowl. They're doing it because there's millions of eyeballs who are going to go tell that story. That word of mouth marketing that happens after the Super Bowl, that's what they're paying for. And that's almost priceless.
Well, first of all, how do we craft the story? And then secondly, how can we start to be helpful to our patients and clients and customers and feed it to them?
The number one key is really understanding who you are and how you add value above and beyond what you do. So yes, you are an acupuncturist, but there's a you behind that. There's a value behind that. Your particular approach, your particular experience, the sum of your life experience up to today creates that experience, funnels through to that experience. So giving people the language, giving people the words, doing the work to uncover exactly how to describe to people in as few words as possible who you are and how you add value. Then practice that. Feel good about it. Own it. You know, when I help people come up with their statements, I tell them, I want you to say it in the shower. I want you to talk to yourself in the car while you're at the stoplight. Like, you can't just run through it in your head. You need to say it out loud over and over and over again so that it sounds like you. It has your cadence. It really feels like you. So it has to be your words, but you have to be used to saying it. Because if you may love it and you may think it's absolutely you, but if you've only ever run through it in your head, the first time you try to say it, it's going to like trip out of your mouth instead of coming smoothly out of your mouth. So you have to practice. And there's nothing wrong with practicing. I tell people, professional athletes put in 10,000 hours of practice. Why do the rest of us feel like we can get away with cramming at the last minute, right?
Well, and especially when it comes to talking and communicating, especially if it's in public, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of people are afraid, even one-to-one. Often people have a hard time saying, yeah, you know, I'm an acupuncturist and here's the thing that I do beyond acupuncture. How do you get that out there?
Yeah, because it's more than that. It's more than, you know, I'm an acupuncturist. You got into it for a reason. You know, what drove you to become an acupuncturist? What's your particular spin on it? You know, what's the never that you do kind of thing?
I want to come back to this never piece again. This is the second time I've heard you say it, and you gave us a little glimpse into it earlier. Let's dig into it just a little bit more.
So the whole idea is we have expectations. It's also just how our brain works. So I may focus and my expertise may be on branding and communications, but in order to be really good at that, I end up doing a lot of research and studying a lot of like brain psychology and neurology because the way our brain works determines and influences how we communicate with each other, how we receive those messages, how we take stuff in, why we become fascinated by certain things and not others. So when you have a fundamental understanding of how the brain works, it's largely based on pattern recognition. If it looks like a duck, if it sounds like a duck, if it quacks like a duck, it must be a duck. So when I work with salespeople, if you're wearing a logoed polo shirt and you have a clipboard in your hand and you're walking into my place of business without an appointment, the brain says, okay, you must be a salesperson. And I'm immediately going to draw some conclusions and make some judgments based on that because that's how the brain works. And so the idea of do the never is to break that pattern, to do something that I'm not expecting, to give me the thing that I didn't anticipate, so that therefore I can't react and operate on pattern recognition alone. I have to stop. I have to really listen to you. I have to actually consider who you are, what you're doing, what you're saying.
I love this. So, and I suspect there's different ways of interrupting the pattern. Surprise would be one. I would think surprise would be a key element here. But we go through so much of the day on autopilot, right? We've got maps in our head and we're working out of the map. We're not working out of reality. And it sounds like when you say do the never, you're suddenly pulling people back into reality and into the moment.
Very much into the moment, right? Because now if I'm in the moment and I'm not in my head, I'm not thinking about how am I going to get this person out of my office, I'm like, wait a minute, what's going on here? I wasn't expecting that. Okay, now let me really look at this person. Let me really listen to what they have to say. And then your job is to deliver that wow statement that tells them who you are, how you add value in 140 characters or less, because we live in a post-tweet society and you don't have a 30 seconds for a 30-second elevator pitch anymore. You got about 9 seconds. You got one sentence. After you've broken that pattern and gotten my attention, you got 9 seconds before I decide whether or not I want to keep listening to you.
The attention span of a goldfish.
Mm-hmm.
9 seconds.
Yep.
Wow. Okay. So how do we do this?
So number one thing, bring in adjectives.
Adjectives.
Adjectives. So you are not just an acupuncturist. You are a thorough acupuncturist. You are a passionate acupuncturist. You are an innovative acupuncturist. You are being an analytical acupuncturist.
Mm-hmm. I'm a research-based acupuncturist.
You're a research-based acupuncturist.
If that happens to be your bag.
Right.
I'm an intuitive acupuncturist, if that happens to be your bag.
Right. And so the idea here is to figure out what is that perspective? What is that value that I add? And what adjective or adjectives can describe that? And put that in front of the what you do. Because if you tell me what you do first, it's really easy for my brain and its need for pattern recognition to commoditize you.
Yep.
But if you give me those adjectives first, again, it's all designed to get us to slow down and stay in that moment and go, well, what makes a research-based acupuncturist different from any other acupuncturist? And that's what you want. You want them to ask those questions. So a really good introductory statement or value statement, you're the new version of the elevator pitch, doesn't answer all the questions. Don't try to cram too much information in there. You want to give them just enough information to make them think and want to ask you questions. I'll give you a great example. So when I meet people for the first time and they say, what do you do? My standard answer is, I teach people how to be fascinating.
Do they always laugh?
They don't always laugh. I was about to say, sometimes it's, wow, really? Can you teach me how to be fascinating? Or they laugh and they go, oh, really? Well, what does that look like? And sometimes it's discernment or disbelief. And they're like, yeah, right. How do you do that? It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what your initial reaction is. You're going to ask me how or why. And then that allows me to go, well, let me tell you all about it because it's super cool, right? And now I got you.
And now we're having a conversation that's fun and interesting because I'm going to learn how to be fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
I sure could have learned that back in like high school. That would have helped.
Right.
Well, you know the next question. How do we learn to be fascinating?
Start by paying attention to what your customers are already telling you. So what are your customers already telling you? And if you haven't asked them, do that right now.
Yeah, there are certain things I hear over and over and over and over and over and over all the time. I get accused of being a psychotherapist in my office at least once a day. It's like, no, I'm not, no. They go, well, you listen so well. You listen better than anybody I know. And it's like, well, you know, if I'm going to help you, I need to find out about you.
That's why they love you. That's why they keep coming back. That's why they're going to tell people about you. And so now, if you use that as part of your brand, you know, we're not going to churn and burn in this office. If you want someone to sit silent, stick needles in you, and never talk to you and send you on your merry way with zero interaction, this is not the place for you. But if you want someone to really get to know you, to really spend some time with you, you know, so that we can address things inside and out. So you take those things that your customers are already telling you and you build off of it to weave that story. How can you share stories? How can you talk about how you've listened and what it's meant for your clients and how it changes the experience, how it changes the healing for them? Because then that's going to get the attention of other people who are like, I really like acupuncture, but I wish the person listened to me a little bit more.
I generally speaking, when I get a new patient and they've been referred by one of my other patients, I'm going to ask, you know, how did you find out about me? And they'll say, oh, you know, so-and-so. And actually, I realize that I already do this. I'm glad we're having this conversation because I'm already doing it. And then I say to them, what did they tell you? I mean, there's a great way to elicit what is being said when you're not in the room.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even know I was doing it until we're sitting here right now.
I tell people all the time, the conversation is taking place whether you choose to participate in it or not. It's just in your best interest, both as a human being and as a business, to participate in the conversation.
So we need an adjective.
You need an adjective.
Mm-hmm.
Associate it with the what you do. And then usually go into a little bit of the why.
A little bit of the why.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about that.
Human beings are driven by why. There's the thing that you do. There's the thing that you're good at. Sometimes the thing that makes you money isn't the thing that you're most passionate about. And all of those things are okay. All of those things are acceptable. But I, as a fellow human being, I want to, in order to like you, in order to build that trust so that I can be a repeat customer, we want to know more about the people that we're interacting with. And so to understand that why really helps us form that relationship and form that relationship quicker. I'm going to go back to using salespeople as an example because I've been working with salespeople most recently. But you know, you ask a salesperson why they do what they do, because I want to make money, right? Every salesperson will say, because there's money in it. I want to make money, you know? Okay, but that's not really it. And so you start digging down deeper. I want to make money because, you know, I lost a dog and I'm really passionate about dog rescue and all of my extra time and all of my extra funds goes into supporting these charities. I want to make money because I'm supporting my niece's family because her husband died in the war overseas, whatever. If you dig down, you'll get to the real driving force behind why people do what they do. You don't have to literally wear your heart on your sleeve, but just telling people what you're passionate about, why you're passionate about it. Why'd you choose to get into this career? What influenced you? What mountains are you trying to climb? What problems are you trying to solve above and beyond the daily grind of what you do? I love what I do, but it's not all about helping people find words. It's about the look on their faces and the body language as it changes. It's about seeing somebody walk into a conference room unsure and watch them walk out with their head back, shoulders high, full of confidence.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Because now they finally know what to say. If it was just about the words, I'd be a copywriter for an ad agency somewhere. It's about what the words do for people. That's what drives me.
And having the words that authentically represent who you are. You know, so often, I've seen this in my own life. I have a sense of what drives me, or I'll have a sense of, you know, what I'm about with something. But to get it into a very succinct sentence that I can look at and go, oh yeah, you know what? That is me on a good day. And then to be able to say it with the authenticity that just naturally will come because I own that piece of myself.
Mm-hmm.
I think it makes for deeper connections because there's more congruence. You know, it's not like, oh, I'm an acupuncturist. I'm here to help people. God, I hope you come to see me. I need some money, blah. You know, I mean, there's all kinds of subtext that we've got going on underneath what we're saying. And I have found that if the subtext underneath what I'm saying is, yeah, I'm doing this because this rocks my world, it's a whole different conversation.
It is a whole different conversation. And I've known people who, like I said before, their passion may not be in their daily job. So I know several lawyers who are excellent lawyers. They're wonderful litigators. It comes easy to them. It comes natural to them. And they're good at it. They don't love it. What they love is their passion project. And so they're very upfront about the fact that, like, this is my practice and I'm very good at what I do, but this is what I love. So this is why I remain a good litigator and why I will win for you in court, because it allows me to go and spend the rest of my time doing this thing that I'm passionate about. And instead of trying to separate those two things, they bring them together. And the minute they do, their client base is sore.
It's hard not to listen to someone without imagining yourself in that situation. I'm imagining talking to an attorney. Hey, how'd you get into this? Oh man, I love the law. Really? But you know, you hear someone say, I do this, I'm good at it, and I do it so I can do this other thing. Oh.
Exactly. It completely changes the conversation.
Totally changes the conversation. Now I know something about you personally.
And I'm much more willing to be open and be open faster. We're going to hit that. Now I know you, and we're going to hit the like and the trust part a hell of a lot faster than we would have.
Yeah. I mean, like is already beginning, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And trust is beginning. I mean, when someone lays out a bit of who they are, I mean, sincerely who they are, like you say, not wearing your heart on your sleeve, it just changes the resonance of the conversation.
Absolutely. And I'll borrow from Stephen Covey for a moment because, you know, 16 plus years corporate training and development, I've taught or been through just about everything that's out there, including The Speed of Trust by Franklin Covey. One of the fundamental tenets is in order to get trust, you have to give it. And I don't know why we feel like as business owners, that's any different. I have to be willing to trust you with this little bit of information. Here's this tiny little piece of my soul.
So often in a sales negotiation, and let's face it, someone's coming to see an acupuncturist, it's also a sales negotiation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we are lying to ourselves if we say it's not. that there is that piece of it. Yeah, there's often that, like, you know, how do I make this sale? What do I do? How do I say the right thing? I mean, I know there's people out there, you know, I will help you with your practice. I've got these scripts. You know, here's the thing you say that's going to engage a person in this particular way. You spent years in corporate training. I suspect that stuff works to some degree on some people.
It does. But here's where it goes wrong. And we see this so often in, particularly in sales, but also sometimes in specialized industries. So judging from what you just said, acupuncture is no different. Somebody manages to become very successful, and now people are looking to them for leadership or guidance. You're the top real estate agent in our brokerage. So now you're a manager, or now you're responsible for teaching everybody else how you did it. Well, they're probably the top because they're really in touch with who they are and how they add value, and they know how to execute on that. And so what works for them literally isn't going to work for everybody else on the team. It might work for a couple of people who happen to be similar to them. And some of the techniques might be useful for everybody, but nobody's going to get to that same level trying to do exactly what that guy did.
This is why I've invited people like you to be on this podcast, because I'm so interested in these first principles. I'm so interested in getting at what are the core things that you take and you spin it up into your own thing. And it's going to work because it's not someone else. It's you.
And some of it is practice. Some of it is trial and error. There is a difference between sales and sales tactics. And not every sales tactic is right for you. That doesn't make them all wrong. It just means that they're not all right for you. And so whenever people say, well, I don't want to be a salesperson, I don't want to sell, you've had a bad experience with some sales tactics. That doesn't mean that sales fundamentally as a whole is bad.
I got news for you. If I didn't know just a little bit about sales, I could have never, you know, got my wife to marry me. I mean, at a fundamental level, we're all buying and selling all the time in some way, right? I mean, when's the last time you were negotiating something with your kid?
It's all persuasion. It's all persuasion. But is your intent to persuade them for good or for evil? And I would say that 99%, I mean, I've been doing this for a while, 99% of the salespeople out there, their intention is for good. They have something that they really believe will help you. They might be using really terrible sales tactics to try to get you to see that, but most of the time their intent is truly good. And so we can't let that 1% of bad sales experiences sway us against our own sales efforts or sales in general, because guess who suffers? We do.
Yeah, we do. And our family does. Well, you know, it's this funny thing so often with acupuncturists, and I suspect there's other professions as well, but I know acupuncturists better because I is one. there's this thing about, I don't want to be salesy. In fact, there's this thing about I don't even want to be a business person. I'm a healer. I'm not a business person. And even making that division, I think is kind of a mistake, because our business is an extension of our practice.
So here's where I'll get a little crystals and incense and woo-hoo-y on you. but it's science-based, right?
Science-based woo-woo?
Science-based woo-woo.
All right, let's bring it.
So when we think about communicating our message, we have to be right with it inside before it's going to come out effectively outside. The people you're talking about, I don't want to be salesy. I don't want to be a salesperson. You've had a bad experience. You've internalized it. You're afraid everyone's going to view you as that bad experience that you've had. They have to change internally their perception of what it means to sell, or even if they tried, it will never come across effectively. The term I use is interference. You can say all the right words, but if you only believe a third of them internally, your message is not going to get carried across to the person. And everyone focuses on the external interference, but the number one thing that's keeping your message from getting to the people who need it most is inside you. It's your internal interference.
you know, and there's something else that you just said about if we've got a bad opinion about sales, we've probably had a bad experience. I hadn't thought about it that way. Oh, you know, I mean, it's like, maybe you don't like dogs because when you were three, you got scared by a dog, but you don't remember that until maybe you go to therapy or you grew up in a certain kind of family. You've had a bad experience with certain kinds of people. Now you, whatever. We all have these internal maps, representations, so to speak. So if I could just dig in and go, all right, that bad sales experience I had, what was it? Who was it? What happened? And get some clarity on it and be able to look at it from the point where I stand now, you know, as a more competent human being, more competent adult, and you know, maybe be able to unpack it a bit and see where my trip points are. I bet that would be helpful. And the other thing I suspect might be helpful, correct me if I'm wrong on this, if we could come up with a few really great experiences that we had with sales.
And we've all had them, and we're not always conscious of them, but something as simple as there are many stores and many establishments where I know that that person has been trained to greet me when I walk in the door. I know that somebody has drilled into them. It is their job to keep their eye on the door. And when someone walks in, you say, hello, welcome to whatever. Fresh example is Moe's, the Mexican restaurant chain. When you walk in the door, everyone is supposed to, like, even if they're still working on something, they're supposed to lift up their head, look at you and shout, welcome to Moe's. It's like that, right? They're supposed to shout it. There's supposed to be some enthusiasm there. So I know you've been trained to do it, but when they do it right, when they do it genuinely, it puts a smile on my face when I walk in the door, regardless. I appreciate the experience. When they don't do it right, well, you know, when they don't look at you, when they don't pick their head up, when they kind of mumble, welcome to Moe's.
It's funny, they're in Taiwan. 7-Eleven is an extremely popular thing. I mean, 7-Eleven is like a little city hall. You can get everything. You can do everything there from pay your parking ticket to buying a train ticket to buying a concert ticket to getting some water. The food there is actually edible. If you just want to sit down and get on the internet and have a cup of coffee, they got room for you to do that. I mean, the 7-Elevens in Taiwan are the complete polar opposite of the ones here in the States. And they're fantastic and they're everywhere. And when you go in, there's always a bell on the door, ding dong, ding ding. And then all the staff, like Pavlov's dog, ding ding, huaning guangning, which is Chinese for welcome.
Uh-huh.
And it's so hilarious to me. Ding ding, huaning guangning. And it just makes my day. It's a silly little thing.
And it only requires a minimal amount of effort to for me to go, oh, you know.
I'm at 7-Eleven.
I'm in this industry. I know somebody trained you to do that, but it doesn't make it any less enjoyable when I walk in the door and you do it right. So it's that same kind of thing. They are internalizing it. They're having fun with it. Just because somebody said you have to say this doesn't mean it has to suck. Right?
Right. And if they're having fun, you'll feel it.
Yes, absolutely. So I tell people all the time, when you finally get that statement, when you are walking into a Chamber of Commerce event or any other networking event, or you're in some sort of meeting where you're meeting people for the first time and you're going to have to do the introduction, you know, here's who I am, here's what I do. So many people dread it, like internal dread. If you haven't come up with a statement that releases that internal dread, that makes you feel like, you know, I'm a rock star when I say it, right? then it's gonna come across. To use my earlier example, I'm still learning. This may be what I do, but there's always things to learn. There's always things to improve. But I know that when I tell people, I teach people how to be fascinating, they're not necessarily responding to the words. They're responding to how I say it, what I look like, you know, the look I get on my face. Like, it's clear that when I say that, I'm into it. It brings joy. And that energy is contagious. That's what people react to. So you don't have to say something as crazy as I teach people how to be fascinating. You can say something that's very simple and straightforward. But if you've internalized it and if you've practiced in it, it brings you that joy. It brings you that satisfaction. And that comes off of you when you say it. That's what people are going to respond to.
Yeah. Well, again, I keep coming back to when you are congruent with yourself and you've recognized a quality or a couple qualities that other people recognize in you, because that's what they gossip about, to be able to just say it, it's so much easier. And plus, and you don't have to think about, oh God, I'm in one of these, I got to introduce myself. Now, what am I going to say? You already know what you're going to say. You got your 9 seconds.
And it should be congruency. It should be you, no matter where you are, no matter what you're doing. The value that you bring to your business, to your job, is the same value you bring to your friends, to your family, to your children. It's the same across the board. And we shouldn't feel like developing a career or a business reputation requires us to separate those things. I'll give you another great example. We have a local plastic surgeon who's known as the dancing doctor, because in her off time, she does ballroom dancing competitions.
Uh-huh.
And she's excellent at both. And there's no reason she can't be excellent at both. And why should she have to separate those two things? So yes, we have the dancing doctor. And I'm sure that there's people who go to her specifically because of that. And it's so in their case, it works.
Yeah. Well, and we don't need to have everybody as our patient or our client.
No.
Right? There's only so many hours in the day that we've got anyway. Why not fill it up with exactly the kind of folks that you want to be seeing?
Mm-hmm. The people who are going to fill you with energy and joy and satisfaction and accomplishment and all of those things. How amazing is it when your day buzzes by and all of a sudden you're like, shoot, it's 6 o'clock. Where'd the time go? Because you've had nothing but awesome clients all day long, instead of sneaking a glance at your watch because you're just like, is my hour with this guy over yet? You know?
Yeah. I mean, that's the way we want to live our lives.
Yeah.
I remember going to one of your talks at that conference. I mean, in addition to hanging out, you know, with the button lady, you handed out a postcard-y-like thing.
Uh-huh.
You did a very quick, like just a super quick, it took what, 5 or 7 minutes, maybe less. I don't remember. Mm-hmm. I just know it was quick on getting some of these adjectives, starting to get started with this.
Yeah.
Would you run us through that?
Sure. So it's a list of adjectives. I keep it simple because human brains can only handle so much choice.
Which is why Chipotle works, because you can get, you know, there's enough choice, but not too much and not too little.
Right. So we'll do an even more simplified version of it for the listening audience here today. If you remember a few minutes ago, we were talking about how you figure out an adjective, you put that in front of your title or what you do, and then you finish off that sentence with a little bit of the why. So I'm going to give you a list of adjectives to choose from. So listeners at home, get out a piece of paper, get out a pen. You can fill in the blank and you can create your own powerful statement right now by choosing one of these adjectives that I'm about to list and then putting that in front of your job title. And then in a moment, we're going to talk about how you can complete the rest of that sentence. So your adjectives you have to choose from are confident, energizing, methodical, goal-oriented, organized, stable, edgy, creative, resourceful. So again, those choices are confident, energizing, methodical, goal-oriented, organized, stable, edgy, creative, resourceful. So you would put one of those adjectives in front of your job title or your role, and then you fill out the rest of that sentence with a little bit of your why, which is easiestly determined by why people love you. So we talked earlier, Michael asked, how do you figure out that why? And one of the best ways is to listen to what your customers are saying, right? It's not just your customers or your clients, your friends and family. You know, when people come to you and go, you know what I love about you, right? You know what I like about you? This is why I like hanging out with you, right? Chances are somebody's had a statement similar to that, that they've said to you. So think about those things that people say. So, Michael, what was your example that you're a good listener, right?
Yeah, I keep getting accused of it.
Okay. So if we were to put together Michael's statement, Michael, which of these adjectives would you choose? Did you make a choice?
Yeah, I did.
Which did you choose?
It's the creative.
Creative. All right.
Yeah.
So Michael would say that he is a creative acupuncturist who takes time to listen to his clients.
Oh, man, I like that sound,
right?
Of that.
A creative acupuncturist who takes time to listen to his clients. So now, if he were to say that to someone, they're going to come up with all sorts of like, really? What does that mean? Tell me more about that. Well, how is the listening that you do any different from the listening anybody else would do? What makes you creative? I didn't know that you could be a creative acupuncturist, right? Like, I can think of a handful of questions already. And that's the whole idea, is to get people to ask questions.
That's right. Because once you're asking questions, then you're really engaged. Then you're having an authentic conversation, which is really what I think we're all looking for.
I know that's what we're looking for. I know that's what we're looking for. The research shows it. Loneliness is a growing epidemic in the United States. We are so connected on our devices that we've forgotten how to connect in person. And so if you think about the brands that are really doing well right now, who have really successful brands, campaigns, messages that are really penetrating the public's frame of mind, they're all about the humanness of their brand and the connection. They know their clients and they're making a connection with them. So yeah, it's not just about, I think that's what we all want. We do. That's what we all want.
It's what we want. And your point's well taken. These days, we have these digital devices that connect us in a certain way, but they totally leave us devoid in others.
Mm-hmm.
This is a place that we can fill in with our, in-person face-to-face, which is actually what you're doing when you're doing acupuncture.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah. Cool. I feel like we've had 3 hours of conversation in 52 minutes.
And we could keep going.
We could. I like to try to keep these to an hour. So why don't you give us one more piece that the listeners can chew on and work with, and then we'll wind this thing on down. And you know, toward the end, we'll let people know how to get in touch with you too, in case they've got questions or they want to go deeper.
So I guess as a last statement, I will say, I'm not going to cheesy and blandly say, just be you, because that's so vague. And I think when you give that type of advice, people go, how? What does that mean?
Well, you know, you carry around a crash helmet. I can't imagine someone who carries around a crash helmet saying something like, just be you. Yeah, I don't think so.
But I will say that find that essence, find that thing that you've been hiding, that you've been watering down, listen to what your clients are telling you, and find a way to bring it to the forefront. Bring more of yourself into your brand. Even if you run a larger agency or a larger small business and you've got multiple employees, and you might fall into the trap of thinking, well, it's not about me, it's about the company. If you run it and you're the face of it, you're the figurehead of it, it is about you. And your personality dictates far more about the brand than you realize. So if you're conscious of that and you make decisions based off of that and purposefully put more of yourself into your brand, you're going to find that you start to attract more of those ideal clients who've been looking for you all along.
So you got to own it like a boss, huh?
You really do.
Yeah.
Somebody asked me the other day, what is it about your personality? And I said, I'm a professional weirdo. Because that's what I'm here in this world to do, is to, you know, be the wacky one and the funny one and, you know, make weird faces and run around all over the room during a workshop but ultimately I'm delivering value. I'm creating a fun experience, but that's my method of delivering the value. And it shouldn't be the same as everybody else's, you know?
You know, the only way that I would change that statement is she is a brilliant professional weirdo.
I appreciate that.
Robin, thank you so much for taking the time. Tell us real quickly how people can get in touch with you if they want to know more or maybe even get some help with dialing in who they are so that they can say it proudly because they totally feel it.
Thank you. You can find me on the web at launchingyoursuccess.com. That's the main website. We are ramping up our content efforts. So we're going to start putting out a lot of the tips and tricks and going deeper into some of the stuff that you and I talked about today. So if people really want to dig into what messages work and how branding can be applied and influenced way beyond social media, we're going to start putting out a lot more content like that. So launchingyoursuccess.com. Or if you want to hang out with me and chat on social media, I've been known to drop some jokes and some other things on social media. It's on just about everything, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. It's at launch_success.
Okay, great. I'll make sure that's all on the show notes page. Again, Robin, thank you so much. I look forward to the next time we get to meet in person too.
Me too. Thank you so much. This has been awesome.
Yeah, it's been fun.